You either have to sit down or cut your head off. If you stand up, it gets in the way of the screen. Did you see that? Yeah, I thought so.
I was just sitting down.
Let's do this. First question. There's many answers, many right answers to the first question. What are the lessons? When Krishna performs his pastimes, he wants to teach us by his pastimes. So what's one of the lessons that Krishna wanted to teach through this pastime?
To tell people that he's the Supreme Lord.
Okay, that's nice. What other lesson? What lesson is Krishna teaching? Maybe that's too high level question. How about this one? When somebody insults you, what should you do? Someone says, "You did something bad," and you know you didn't do something bad, but they go around saying, "You know what they did? They did this thing bad," but you know you didn't do something bad. What do you do? Get angry, right? Why are they spreading this terrible rumor? It's not true. Or you go say something bad about them, right? No. What did Krishna do? How to respond to unjust criticism. Give some instruction. You can put your hand down for now. Here's some instruction from Manu Samhita. What to do about unjust criticism. Throughout his life of Brahmana, he considered material prestige to be like poison and dishonor to be like nectar. After all, if one learns to tolerate dishonor, then his agitation will subside and he will happily sleep, happily wake, and happily move about. The person who insults him will, because of his sin, become regretful. And his happiness and this in the next life will be vanquished. So this lesson is tolerate. But Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita also, right? Comes to pictures from Bharata. Matra sparsha sukanteya sitoshna sukra dupada agamapayam nuchastam to pictures from Bharata. Here's Vidura speaking to Dhritarashtra. The ignorant seek to injure the wise by malice. Malice is being mean-spirited, hurting another person, that's malice. And backbiting. You know what backbiting is? You can imagine what backbiting is. This little boy here comes and bites your back, that's backbiting. Backbiting is, you didn't do anything. Somebody comes and behind your back, they say, "You did something." Just like Balaram did that with Krishna. Balaram said, "Mother Soda, Krishna swallowed dirt." And Krishna said, "I didn't swallow dirt. Mother Soda, they're lying." That's backbiting. The ignorant seek to injure the wise by malice and backbiting. By so doing, the critic takes upon himself the load of the wise man's sins, which he, the wise man, casts off. I forgive him, the ignorant. Vidura to Dhritarashtra and Mahabharata. Here's Dattatreya from the Mahabharata Udogya Parva. A person being criticized should not criticize in retaliation. For the pain felt upon receiving criticism, if endured,
will itself consume the critic and bring in exchange the result of his good deeds. Adatreya. He's an incarnation of Supreme Lord. Probably knows what he's talking about. And we should tolerate, endure the criticism. Bhishma, the Yudhisthira, if one who remains tolerant, not becoming angry, certainly attains the abuser's pious credits. Indeed, his own sins are transferred to that wrathful person. That's a good deal. Hey, come and criticize me. Go right ahead. Do it again. How many pious activities do you have? Again, Bhishma to Yudhisthira, Shanti Parva. A person who praises someone in his presence, but criticizes him behind his back, that's backbiting, is no better than dog. His chances for elevation to a higher planet are completely spoiled in this world. So don't criticize. And if you're criticized, you tolerate. Not just as if you're unjustly criticized. You tolerate. And forgive the person. And whatever happens with love, karma, these Tatatrayas and Bhishmas and Duras, they're being scored, they know it. Mm-hmm. We just forgive and tolerate. A little bit about the next scene is about Akrura. We're going to find out about that in a bit. Shantakajira. Okay. Well, where did Satrajit live? Well, where was his home? Outside of Dwarka, right. And he worshipped the sun god. Why did he worship the sun god? What did he want from worship of the sun god?
He wanted
the sun god to come. No, he didn't even know about Shyamantaka Jewel. He wanted wealth. Money. So he worshipped Suryadev. And also, one who worships Suryadev. What else is one get besides money?
Health.
You can worship the sun god to get good health and wealth. So he worshipped the sun god for hours every day. What did he do for worship? He chanted prayers in glorification of Suryadev. And what else did he do? He offered valuable items unto Suryadev. And this went on for a long time, every day. Then what happened? What happened?
Suryadev came.
Really? What'd they do? Gave him the Shyamantaka jewel. And what did he say when he gave him the Shyamantaka jewel?
He said, Keep it.
And worship it. And what will happen? Two things will happen. Gold. How much gold? How many pounds of gold every day? 170 pounds of gold every day. How much do you weigh? How much do you weigh? You know your weight? How much do you weigh?
About 69.
69. Say 70 pounds. So it's like 2.5 Thundasunos. Every day. Solid gold. Almost 3. 2.5. He'll get 170 pounds of gold every day. And one who worships Shyamataka jewel, very important. This whole story, very important. What other thing will happen? In the place where the jewel is worshipped, what will happen? No bad health. No drought or famine. Not like Detroit. No cold weather. Everything's nice. Every day. Just worship the Shaman talking to you. Every day. So, Satrajit is very happy. Oh, thank you. You fulfill all my desires. You know just what I want. Money, 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 money. I got my money. I got 170 pounds of gold every day. And so, Satrajit came to show off. He put the jewel on a necklace and went prancing into the city of Boraka. And when he came into the city of Boraka, what was his consciousness? He was proud. Look at me. What showed his pride? He went right past Krishna's palace. He didn't even say Hari Bol. Didn't even acknowledge Krishna. Oh, he was proud because Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, but I got this Shyamataka jewel. And when Krishna came into the city of Dwaraka, the residents of Dwaraka, the jewel was so effulgent, they thought they couldn't even see Satrajit. They thought the sun god had come. So they went to tell Krishna. What was Krishna doing?
Playing chess.
What was he playing chess? Who was he playing chess with?
Balaram.
And when the residents told Krishna, the sun god, who has such devotion for you, he is radiant and effulgent and he's come to see you. How did Krishna respond? He just smiled. Said, that's not the sun god, that's the Satrajit. And the effulgence that you see is this jewel that's hanging around his neck. Krishna. Krishna. So, Satrajit wanted to establish this worship in Dwaraka. And so he got together all the brahmanas and the dignitaries of Dwaraka. Except for Krishna. Oops, I forgot Krishna. He was a Maya, he forgot Krishna. That's what it means to be a Maya, by the way. Just forgot Krishna. He didn't even invite Krishna. Because when you have a ceremony like this, you invite all important personalities, because by invite the presence of great personalities, it makes everything auspicious. But he was so absorbed in his jewel. He forgot all about Krishna. So then what happened? Krishna thought, this poor, proud person, he needs to be relieved of his pride. So I'll ask him for the jewel and ask him to give the jewel to... Who should have a jewel? The king. Who is the king? The king of Dwaraka was? Ugrasena. Ugrasena. What does the Satrajit say? Look at his face. What does body language say?
I can't.
No. He thought, better than I have the 170 pounds of gold every day. I'll keep some joy. Which means he was holding on to his pride. Krishna tried to relieve in a very gentle way. But he wanted to hold on to his pride. If you hold on to pride, my dear devotees, it can lead to big problems. It sure did for Tatrajit and his brother. What was his brother's name?
Prasena.
Prasena, right. Prasena. Prasena, there it is. Prasena.
Who's Ugrasena? He's the king. Satrajit had a brother named Prasena. Yeah.
So Prasena, one day, he was going into the forest to hunt, as kings would sometimes do. And he, on the back of the horse, he was wearing this nice jewel. And who's this guy up here, the king of the forest, a lion? The lion thought, who's this proud person walking around with a jewel around his neck? Doesn't he know I'm the king of the forest? This jewel is meant for me. I'll simply relieve that fool from his jewel. So he jumped down with his jaws, with his teeth. He killed the lion, killed the horse, and Prasena took the jewel. And then what did he do? Went into the cave. And who happened to be in that cave? Jambavan. Who's Jambavan? He was a king of the bears and a great devotee of the Lord Ramachandra. Did you know that? Jambavan is a great devotee of Lord Ramachandra. So when Jambavan heard the lion roaring out of pleasure playing with that jewel, he came out to protect his family. And when he saw the lion and saw the blood on the paws of the lion, he could once understand, you bad person, you killed just to get that jewel. You better get out of this cave at once. They changed challenges back and forth. Lion said, you better get back in your cave at once or you're dead. So they had a big fight. And pow! Jambavan KO'd the lion. Finished him, tossed him out of the cave, went back in the cave. Now, what was Jambavan's thought about that jewel? We know with Satrajit, what happened with Satrajit? What happened with Satrajit? Proud. What happened with Jambavan? I don't have any use of a jewel. He tossed it to his kid. He played with it. He was detached. Because he's a devotee. Because he needed a fancy jewel, he can go play with that jewel. Okay, what happened next? Meanwhile, back in Dwarka. What happened in Dwarka? No, before that happened. Satrajit, what does Satrajit do? He was waiting for Prasena to come back from the forest. Prasena didn't come back from the forest. So he started making up a story. He made up a complete story. What was the story?
Go ahead. That
Krishna killed Prasena. Why would Krishna kill Prasena? Why was he saying that why would he kill Prasena?
Because
Krishna wanted the jewel to go to Ugrasena. And Satrajit said no. So Krishna killed Prasena to take the jewel. That's called rumor. I learned that in Bombay. This means you're talking, it means telling a rumor. I learned it from Dimapur. He was once standing talking to the BDT officer, and I came to speak with him, and he put up his hand and went like this and meant talking. I then made her arm. He used the same thing, but it was someone was telling a rumor about another person. It's all being language. So it's Krishna killed Prasena. Did you hear? Krishna killed Prasena.
Did you hear? Krishna killed Prasena. Hey, did you guys hear that?
Krishna killed Prasena. He wanted to get that jewel and I wouldn't give it to him. You all heard him say it. So he killed Prasena to get the jewel. And it wasn't true. It wasn't true at all. And that's Krishna. What to speak of ourselves? So sometimes it can happen to ourselves. Somebody can say, why did you do that? Of course, they ask you, why did you do that? They go to him, why did he do that? You know this bad thing that he did? Hey, you know this bad thing he did? This bad thing, that this guy over here, the bad thing he did? What that thing? What are you talking about? It's not true what it is. Where's this idea come from anyway? It goes on. Even in Dwarka, even to Krishna. Of course, Krishna arranged the whole thing so he could teach his lesson. What's the lesson? How do you deal with some unfounded rumor, some malicious statement being made against you? He spread it all over the place, door to door, defaming Krishna. Finally, back to Krishna's ears. When Krishna heard, he just smiled. But he took some action. What was the action that Krishna took? What did Krishna do? In simple language, he stood by the truth. He went to the elders of Dwarka and said, elders, you wise men and those that are respected by everybody, come with me. We'll follow the path of Prasena. And you can verify. You'll be witnesses for the whole of Dwarka for what happened. And sure enough, the truth vindicated Krishna. There was the dead horse and the dead Prasena and the marks of the lion. And then he found the dead body of the lion, so it was all very clear. And Krishna somehow knew that it was Jambavan who killed the lion. So they went to the mouth of the cave. Well, because it was Jambavan's cave, I guess that's fine. Then what happened? Krishna said, I'm going to go inside and get the jewel. And what did they say? Don't go, it's dark in there. Let's go back and get some torches. They didn't have flashlights or anything. Torches means like you put some straw or cloth or something on the end of a stick and you light it. And it's a torch at night. You can see in the night. Now in India they call flashlight a torch, but it's death the torch. Light at the end of the stick. So people can see at night. And Krishna said, no, that's not necessary. You just wait here. Don't be afraid. Oh, if you go inside and something happens, we'll never forgive ourselves. Don't worry. Nothing's going to happen. You just wait outside. How long did they wait outside? 12 days. 12 days. At the end of the 12 days and 12 nights, they went back to Dwarka to tell King Ugrasena.
Who's Ugrasena? He's the king, right? Who's the brother of Sudrajit? Prasena.
Prasena is the brother. Ugrasena is the king. They went back to tell Ugrasena all that happened. And they were in big anxiety because they're so attached to Krishna. They told Krishna, we never believed this for a moment. Krishna said, I know your heart. But some people, they heard this rumor and I just had to clear my name. And so I stood by the truth. And now you know the truth, you can let everyone know. I want to return to the Samantaka jewel. So when he went inside to find the Shamataka jewel, he saw deep inside the cave the Shamataka jewel where Jambavan's son was playing. But when the nurse saw Krishna at the mouth of the cave, she thought it was a thief. Ah! Something like that. So, this is also very important. When Jamavan heard the scream, he came at once, and he didn't even recognize his Lord and Master. Why did he not recognize Krishna? Very important. Angry. When you get angry, you may not even recognize somebody that you love and worship and adore, and your very best, dearest, closest friend. You may not even recognize them because you're so covered with anger. But that would never happen to you guys, right? No. Well, what's something that helps promote anger? This is a Bhagavad Gita question for adults. What promotes anger? Kamesha Krodesha. And what promotes lust? Bodily conception. But he was thinking, my son! Because he was so absorbed in bodily conception, when he came out, he couldn't even tell who was Krishna. And the fighting went on for 28 days. At the end of 28 days, Jambavan was completely exhausted. You saw how powerful, with one, he just finished the lion. For 28 days they fought. Day and night and day, and Jambavan was beat. Then he realized, nobody is as strong as he, except one person. Krishna! So he told him this. Jambavan fighting with Krishna. Fighting with stones and tree trunks, bashing one another like clubs. Ooh. Pretty fancy goat he's got there. And he surrendered to Krishna. And he offered his prayers. You are that same Supreme Lord Ramachandra that I have worshipped for so long. Please accept my fullest apologies for this terrible mistake. And Krishna said, that's all right. I'd entered your cave for one reason, because of some misunderstanding by some foolish people. They think that I've killed Prasena, and I just want to bring Shamantaka jewel, so if you would be so kind, you can please give that Shamantaka jewel to me. So, not only Jambavan gave the Shamantaka jewel, but what else did he give?
His daughter.
Yeah.
Daughter.
And what's the daughter's name? Jambavan's daughter is Jambavati. There she is, Jambavati. Close, but not quite. Jambavati. And so there was no brahmana, no formal wedding procedure, but overseen by Jambavan, they exchanged garlands and they were married right in the cave of Jambavan. So Jambavan gave his daughter and the Shamantaka jewel to Lord Krishna. Another most strange thing. There's one hand is the Shamantaka jewel and the other is Jambavati. So, back to Dwarka. They're in such anxiety about Krishna, so they didn't know what to do. They went and worshipped the goddess Durga because she's very merciful. Please bring Krishna back safely. When they finished their puja, she spoke to them and said, very well, I will see if Krishna returns. And just then, Krishna returned. with the Kamataka jewel around his neck and Jambavati on his side. So then what happened? Take a look at your notes. Not in your notes. How about your memory? What happened next? Now they're back in Dwarka. Krishna called for Sitaji. Please come to the royal assembly. Ugrasena and I would like to present you with Vishwamitra jewel. So, hanging his head in shame, Sitaji accepted the jewel, went back to his home, and began to think about the situation. What did he consider about the situation? First it was politics. I'm in big trouble. These residents of Dwarka have been really upset with me because I did this. Then he decided what? Yeah. And the jewel, right? Yeah. So, he was hoping not exactly that would relieve him of the offense, but Krishna maybe would forgive him. So he presented the jewel and his daughter. Krishna accepted the daughter and gave back the jewel. Why did Krishna give back the jewel? Huh?
I don't know.
You don't know. Krishna said why he gave the jewel back.
I don't know.
Because?
He did not really want it.
Yeah. He wasn't given from his heart. He didn't really want to give the jewel back. He didn't mind giving his daughter, but he did want to give it back. So it wasn't given from his heart, and so he said, Sitaji, you keep the jewel. You have a nice little altar. You made a nice altar and had the jewel installed. And you keep it. I'll accept your jewel-like daughter. Very beautiful painting by Krishna, where Sitaji is offering Satya Bhama and the Shaman Tapa jewel in Dwarka. So we read about that this morning, The ladies in Hastinapur were standing on the rooftops. They were appreciating how fortunate are these residents of Dwarka, and particularly the Queen Satyabhama and Jambavati and Rukmini. How valiant Krishna won their hand in marriage. Okay. Thus ends the story of the Jambavati jewel. But actually, it doesn't end the story of the sandwich opportunity. Because that was chapter 56 of the 10th canto, but chapter 57. Would you like to hear a little of chapter 57? What happened next? Okay, kids, you got to pay attention. I know it's challenging. It's stories, it's nice. This is a nice story, right? Yeah. Tomorrow your parents will ask you something that you remember today. Who were the two queens that Krishna married surrounding the Shamantaka jewel?
Satyabhama
and Jambavati. Very good. And who is the father of Jambavati? Jambavan. And who is the father of Satyabhama? Sivaji. The narrator pronounced it Satrajit, but it's Sitrajit. Sitrajit. And who did Sitrajit worship?
Sun god.
Surya Dev. And he got the Jambavati jewel. That ended up causing him some big problems. Especially in the form of pride. If you got something, and the heart is not pure, you can have a problem. Better make art pure than get something. Maybe art is pure, you can have something, I have something. We're both okay. So now Satrajit has the jewel. In Dwarka, Krishna received news. Something very bad has happened in Hastinapur. The Pandavas died. It wasn't true. Krishna knew it wasn't true. Balaram knew it wasn't true, but they thought they burned the house of Bak. But this is the chronology. When the house of Bak incident was taking place, it's the project, the Shamatapa jewel thing happened. Well, Krishna and Balaram left Dwarka to go attend the funeral of the Pandavas, fully knowing that they didn't die. Later, while Krishna was in Hastinapur, that's when the marriage of Draupadi took place. Krishna was there. In the Swayambar of Draupadi, Krishna and Balaram were at that assembly because they had gone to attend the funeral of the Pandavas. So while they're over there attending the funeral of the Pandavas, Akrura, good old Uncle Akrura. We'll go back to this. We know about Akrura from this situation. Akrura was sent by Krishna, by Kamsa, to go bring Krishna from Vrindavan to Mathura so that Kamsa could kill him. He was going to try to kill him anyway. And he disclosed the whole plot to Akrura. And Akrura said, "My dear king, I'll gladly go to see Krishna. But I just would like you to know, I'm your minister, I'm giving you this advice. You're inviting death. I'll be glad to go. I stay here just so I can see Krishna, because I heard that Krishna had appeared." And on his way to Vrindavan, as he was meditating on meeting Krishna, he became so absorbed in thought of Krishna, manmana, thought of Krishna, that when he saw the footprints of Krishna in the soft sand of Vrindavan along with the hooves of the cows, he lost it. He fell out of the chariot, rolled on the ground in the dust of Vrindavan, calling Krishna's name. And then he saw Krishna and Balaram just outside Vrindavan, very near to the place where the Goshal of Nanda Maharaj was kept. He offered wonderful prayers to Krishna and Balaram and made arrangements with Nanda Maharaj that he would, for his chariot, that he would take them the next morning from Vrindavan to Mathura. So when this happened, the gopis tried everything they could. They tried to grab onto the horses. They put their bodies before the wheels of the chariot. They pleaded with Krishna. And then they cursed Akrura. "You will have to suffer like us from the separation of Krishna. Just as you caused this great pain and suffering to us, you will also have to suffer." It wasn't exactly a curse, it was just, a kind of transcendental karma thing. Although it was all just part of Krishna's Leela, and the gopi speaking in this way to Krishna was also part of Krishna's Leela. So Krishna always upholds the word of his devotee. Certainly he's going to uphold the word of the gopis. So Akrura had to undergo the separation from Krishna. So here's what happened. Akrura, Krishna's dear devotee in Dwarka, along with another devotee whose name was Kritavarma, they got together and started to talk about this Satrajit. He accused Krishna falsely of murder. And it wasn't true. this Satrajit should meet the same destiny as his brother for this atrocious act against Krishna. It was a murder plot. They were just so angry with Satrajit. And our acharyas comment at length about Kapila Krura. He's up there. He's listed as one of the 9 types of devotional service where you achieve perfection. So how can somebody like that be involved in a theft and murder plot? Steal that some chakra jewel and finish him off. They didn't exactly say finish him off, but they indirectly said he should meet the same destiny as Hussaina. Pretty close. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says it's because of the causing disturbance as he did to the gopis. And Prithivarma, his badness was the result, or the behavior of Prithivarma was caused by his association with Kamsa. A Kris state is a minister because he's a member of the royal family. And so that those that when Kamsa took over, he put his father in prison, put Vasudeva Devaki in prison, and everybody else ran for their life. Unless they stayed and were maintained by and just were obedient to Kamsa. Agura stayed because he wanted to see Krishna. That was what he stayed for. And Kritavarma didn't have such lofty sentiments, although he was a devotee. And so he had this bad association with Kamsa. And moreover, he had a get-back mentality. You know what get-back mentality is? Somebody, does something to you. So, do it back. Get back. Rather than tolerating. So, Satyajit had promised Satyabhava's hand in marriage to Kritavarma. And here he goes, he just gave his hand in marriage to Krishna. They should be happy because he's a devotee of Krishna. So Satyabhava becomes married to Krishna. How do you go? But he was feeling, oh, I should have had Satyabhava's hand promised and he didn't fulfill his promise. Let me get back at him. And so they told Shatadanva, go get the jewel. You're clever, you're strong. We're old. You're young and strong and intelligent. Get the jewel. When he went to get the jewel, he got carried away. He didn't just take the jewel. In his sleep, he killed Satrajit and took the jewel. And in the morning, when Satyabhama awoke and went to see her father and pay her respects, she found him dead. She cried and cried and cried. And so she personally went all the way to Hastinapur to request Krishna, come at once and avenge the death of my father. She placed the body of Satrajit in oil so it would be preserved, something like they did with Dasarath body, so his funeral could be performed properly. Krishna returned with Balaram. And as Krishna and Balaram returning, Shatadanva thought, uh-oh, I'm in big trouble now. So he went to Kritavarma, help, 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 help me do something. And Kritavarma said, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, he's all powerful, I'm not going to go against Krishna. Apura, do something, help, help. One who knows the strength of Krishna is not going to act against Krishna's interests. Sorry, Charlie. So, Shatadanva was in big trouble, so he gave the jewel to Agura, got on his horse and rode as fast as he could. But something like Ashwatthama running from Arjuna, he couldn't run fast enough. Krishna Balaram caught up and with his Sudarshan Chakra he removed the head of Shatadanva from the rest of his body and searched his clothing and didn't find the Jamantaka jewel. They were just outside the city of Mithila, or Janaka Maharaj was residing or presiding. So Balaram said, "We're so close. I'll go and pay my respects to Janaka Maharaj in Mithila. Why don't you go back and see if you can find the Shalantaka jewel?" The Bhagavatam says he stayed there for several years, and while he was there, he gave training to Duryodhana and how to fight with a club. That's how Duryodhana got to be so good with fighting with a club against Bhima. Balaram taught him. Meanwhile, Krishna went back. So Shatadhanva is dead. Kritavarma heard Krishna has come. He left at once. And Akura, he left at once too. And Akura went to the place where his father was married. Shvapalka was the father of Akura. We have a family tree here somewhere. Shvapalka was the father of Akura, and in this way, through the family line, we find that Krishna, he's not exactly Akura, he's like an uncle, great seven descendant, pretty great uncle. But there's Krishna, uncle Akura. So the residents of Dwarka were saying that there's now pestilence and disease and drought in Dwarka. So the reason is Akura is gone for some reason, something to do with Krishna's returning, we don't know what it is, but they started doing this second time, Krishna. And we think, you know, once is enough. But in the next chapter, it's... Because what happened was, when Shvapalka... Where was that? There we go. There was a drought in Benares, and the king of Benares was visited by Shvapalka. The king of Benares gave his daughter, Gandini, in marriage to Shvapalka, and the day after the marriage, rain came. So, and continual, regular rain was present in Benares. So Shvapalka got the reputation that wherever he is, there won't be a drought. And very nice climatic conditions, and disease won't come either. Something like Shamataka. And they thought, of course, like that too, because that's, you know, father like son. So because Akura is gone, now we have this problem. So Krishna, what did Krishna do? Another unjust criticism. Two in a row. Krishna did the same thing. He stood by the truth. He called his ministers and said, what the rumor is not true. Let us invite Akura to return. I know the reasons why there's this. The Acharyas described the reason is Krishna desired it, because how could something irregular happen in Dwarka other than Krishna desiring it? But what Krishna wanted was that this rumor about the Shamataka jewel be put to rest. It was because the Shamataka jewel was out of Dwarka. So Akura came back and imagine Akura was involved in a murder plot for Krishna's father-in-law. And Krishna knew that Krishna knew. He came back before Krishna. Krishna said, "My dear uncle, I heard that your worship in Benares is very opulent. I heard that you now have a throne of gold. Where did you get such gold, Akura? In fact, I know you're worshipping Shamataka jewel. That's where you get 170 pounds of gold a day. That's where the gold throne comes from. Right, Uncle Kuro? Can I see the jewel?" And at once, Akura produced the jewel. "Is that my jewel? I just want to show it to my relatives. Can I just show it to my relatives? They know the reason that there was this disturbance in Dwarka, drought, because the Shamataka jewel wasn't here. Although that wasn't the reason either. It was Krishna didn't need a Shyamataka jewel to keep regularity with Dwarka. It was his will. He wanted to show. He wanted to teach us. When you have unfair, unjust criticism that comes your way, what do you do? Now, there are lots of things people do when that happens. They get angry. They get, I'm going to show them. They get depressed. They get disturbed. You know, like, these are devotees. Why are they? You know, I can understand. Not devotees, but devotees. How can devotees do that? Even Krishna can happen, so it can happen to us. What do you do? Krishna's teaching us to do. You state the truth. You show the truth. The truth is self-evident. Next time you're in one of those situations, think of the Shyamataka jewel. Think of Krishna and the Shyamataka jewel story. And stand by the truth. Don't be distracted. And follow these principles, Madhu Sangha. Brahmin should consider prestige like poison, dishonor to be like. So just you tolerate. Trust in some practical way, and you can demonstrate the truth. You can make some effort to do that. And of course, truth will prevail. Light is stronger than darkness. It's not, you know, forceful, twist their arm till it hurts kind of. It's just matter of fact. Lord of goodness, speak the truth. Yeah.
So when you have to speak the truth, do you confront a person who... Or do you, like, speak the truth to the people around the situation?
It's best to do with it. To the word confront is kind of, like, confrontational. You go to the person directly and say, maybe you can offer an explanation. Because what I've heard, I just got an international phone call just before coming down. Someone was, oh, they said something's untrue. So I said, here's what, after they finished, you know, whining and complaining, what I said was, here's three choices. You can go directly to the person. A village elder can go directly to that person. Or I can go directly to that person. But it's not in a challenging way or confrontational way, but, you know, it's been brought to my attention that this, you know, this was being said by another person. There's always two sides to a story, and there's the other side of the story. So it's not confrontational, and you get a fair hearing. And then, you know, you give them advice. I don't think it's a good idea that you speak something that's not true. And my recommendation is you go to the person that you're speaking about that's not true and apologize. And then correct the damage and be done. Because if you choose not to do that, someone else will probably do that. And it's much better if you do it. What do you think? Yeah, that's, you know, that's stand by the truth. But not in a confrontational way, but yeah, speak directly. And then, if they don't go and correct, you know, around the situation, then if you have to do it or be an instrument for it to be done, then it should be done in a ecumenical mood. Truth, not a, you know, just person. But here's the truth. You can accept it or not accept it, but here's the truth. You should have the truth. Well, and then the other, what about this and what about that kind of thing going on? You just speak the truth. I'm a firm believer that truth prevails. We don't need to be defensive or confrontational. Just stand by truth. The truth prevails. Oh, these two girls got away without having to answer any questions. How did that happen? I didn't even see you in the audience. You're hiding. We'll ask you tomorrow morning. Okay. Yes?
I have a question. I lost it.
Someone else? Yes.
What about reaching get back mentality in some very advanced devotees like Draupadi or Bhima, when Bhima said, I'll kill Duryodhana, Draupadi said, I'll wash my hairs with the blood of the Shasan. So that seems like get back mentality.
Yeah, not so good. But, you know, the higher nature of Draupadi is even when Ashwatthama was brought before her, it was scared him. That's the higher nature of Draupadi. You know, Bhima's Bhima. because of the gross and repeated injustice, his Kshatriya spirit, a chivalrous spirit, predominated. But, you know, by laws of Manu, there's certain fairness in his words. So we're speaking also about, let's be a little bit clear about the position of a Kshatriya and the position of us. We're not in the position of Kshatriyas. It's not our duty to go and arrest people or to bring justice into the world. The Kshatriya's duty to do that. So they must administer their physical strength according to codes of justice. Let's say if someone did some harm to your daughter. It's not like, oh, we should be, no. You take appropriate action, but it should be in the mood of certainly protecting your daughter, but also protecting the other person from the action that may come to them for some harm that they've done. In a very thoughtful, reasoned way. And maybe, you know, you go to the police and say, this person harmed my daughter. It's your duty as police to protect and defend. For example. It's a criminal kind of thing. Put it in the hands of those people. You remember?
Yeah, Krishna gave the jewel back to Satyajit to give it.
Willingly.
Yeah, so we also perform sadhana bhakti and we try to please Krishna, but we might not fully have the...
Because fully is different. Fully is very different than Satyajit. It's not like, you know, we make an offering of the Raj Bhog offering, we're thinking, I really want to eat it before I offer it. We may not be pure in devotion, but we're not thinking like that. Shouldn't be thinking like that. Yes.
Maharaj, could you please explain some more about the chivalrous rasa that Krishna has with his devotees? Like as we saw with this fighting with Jambavan, like he indulged, but it's a loving reciprocation with this devotee, but like in the mood of fighting. So could you please like explain some more?
Well, here's what Prabhupada says. He gives a worldly example. He says, you know, so it's going to be compared to Narayan wanting to fight or Krishna wanting to fight. So we find that mentality even in worldly people. A king will sometimes keep a very powerful person to wrestle with and sporting fights, you know, jousting and, you know, throwing him around, and, you know, he likes, like, you know, they like physical contact like that. So they pay the man to hang around and punch him, you know, and fight with him, because he can give a good fight. So, like that, Krishna likes. He likes sporting in that way. So, who can do that but his devotee? So, sometimes it's with his devotee. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes, in relation to the giant Vijay story, that they prayed to Lord Narayana. They were very intimate servants. They were doorkeepers, not only at the gate, but sometimes in the palace. That was like their thing. They guarded the Lord's doors. One time, they were guarding the Lord's doors because he said, I want to be left undisturbed. Whoever comes to the door, do not let them enter. So the goddess of fortune came to the door. They said, I'm sorry, our Lord does not want anyone to enter. She didn't say anything, but Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes. But she was upset. So later, when she was with Lord Narayan, she said, you should do something about those. So the Lord was in a dilemma. Because he knew what the purpose, they were just following his instructions. So he was supporting them. But at the same time, the goddess of fortune, she wanted him to do something. So to please the goddess of fortune and to please them, they offered this prayer, my dear Lord, we know that you like some combat, but there's no one to come. So we'll perform that service for you, if you like. Please give us the opportunity. So then, four Kumaras. The Lord simultaneously satisfied four different sets of people. The goddess of fortune, and the four Kumaras, and Jaya and Vijay. Satisfying all his devotees in one swoop, at his own desire for karma. He's expert. Yes. Regarding which? Jaya and Vijay pastime. Yeah.
How about Jaga and Mata?
That's a nice question. They in Goloka Vrindavan, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains, there's Vrindavan, there's Mathura, there's Dwarka in the spiritual sky, and there's also Navadvipa in the spiritual sky, in Goloka Vrindavan, in Krishna Loka. So those associates of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, there's a counterpart of those same personalities who are associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Navadvipa. In the same way that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Radha Krishna, not an expansion of, but is Radha Krishna, and his abode is Navadvipa in Goloka Vrindavan. So if you look closely at the cover picture of the first canto, you'll see there's Krishna, there's the river Jamuna and the cows and the peacocks, and look over there in the corner. There's Lord Chaitanya and his devotees having kirtan in Navadvipa in Krishna Loka. So simultaneously both that Jai and Vijay and Jagai Madhai and these three personalities in Krishna's Bhauma Lila, because they're not there in Krishna Loka. The demons are not there in Krishna Loka. but in his Brahma Leela. So I hand up over in this direction. No? No. Yes.
I'm wondering, actually, this is a question about, I mean, like, the four Kumaras, it says they're Brahman realized, I mean, were they material bodies? And what? Because they were trying to get into Vaikuntha, and I thought, you know.
How do you get into Vaikuntha? Have you got a material body? Is that your question?
Yeah. And if they're Brahman realized, they definitely have
material bodies because they're sons of Brahma. And Brahma's body is material, and their body is material. But they were liberated, just like Narada is also a son of Brahma, and he can enter. They couldn't enter because they weren't pure in devotion. When one becomes pure in devotion, as Narada, then one's body becomes spiritualized. So it acts non-differently. And that's a big mystery, don't ask me to unpack that one, but it acts non-differently. Just like the Bhagavatam describes that the Pandavas return to the spiritual world in their self-same bodies. Meaning spiritualized.
So Narada, where he can go?
He can go. He regularly goes. it's said right in the Bhagavatam. Anywhere in the spiritual and material world. He's got a passport and visa. And no shortage of fuel. His tank's always on full. Yes.
When
Krishna's in the cave, Jambavan's cave.
Yes, that time the devotees in the Dwarka. They know Krishna is the Supreme Personality.
They know he's the Supreme Personality.
But why did they go to Goddess
Durga? So why did they get worried? Or why did they go to the Goddess Durga?
Yeah.
Why did the young gopis worship Goddess Katyayani? That's Devi also. There's either one of two answers. There's the answer that says when they were worshipping Durga or Katyayani, they understood that actually this is the internal potency. That's one answer. Because Katyayani is an expansion of, but there's a prototype Katyayani who is Yogamaya. That's one answer. Another answer is like what we discussed this morning, that while engaged in pious activities, they understand the purpose of those pious activities is to attain the qualification to reach Krishna, to see Krishna, to be with Krishna. So they weren't worshipping for something material. They're worshipping for the... It's like you might go to somebody, you know, somebody that you look up to who's moving around this world and say, you know, so-and-so Prabhu or Maharaj, could you please give your blessings that Krishna will be happy with our Janmashtami festival and it'll be very, very wonderful. You know, they're a person of this world, but you see them as in relation to Krishna, that they'll give their blessing for some Krishna-centered activity or event. Oh, goddess, you're the controller of this world. Please arrange for Krishna to come back. He's our life and soul. Not for material benediction. Another way to answer your question is this. When you read Nectar of Devotion, there are 64 items of devotional service, 64 recommended activities for seva. One of those 64 items is worshipping Ganesh. Have you noticed?
Yeah.
Did you wonder Why is that in that list of 64 items for devotional service? When you read Lochan Das Thakur's Chaitanya Mangala, you'll find in the very beginning of the invocation mantras prayers to Ganesh. Because he's on another platform than we are. His platform is, remove all obstacles so Lord Chaitanya's glorification can be made to the world without any interruption. And that way it acts in a spiritual way. So the devotees ask Prabhupada, if it's in the items that Rupa Goswami has given, how come you haven't taught us? And Prabhupada's answer was, if you went to Ganesh, you'd just be wanting something material. So I haven't taught you. Instead, for removal of obstacles, we worship Lord Nrisimhadeva. Every day we worship Lord Nrisimhadeva after Arti, for removing any obstacles that may have arisen in the course of our seva, or any seva parad. We worship Lord Nrisimhadeva. Please remove those obstacles. Ultimately, please remove the obstacles from within our hearts that may have arisen due to our material contact. We worship Lord Nrisimhadeva. And there's more esoteric answers than that one. So they have the qualification that we don't have. When they worship, it's simply for pure love for Krishna. And then Durga acts like the internal potency. Just like before the appearance of Krishna, Krishna called Yogamaya. It's detailed in the end of the first chapter. There's a long, long, long addendum at the end of the first chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10. And it's described there that Yogamaya becomes Durga. Right? Similarly, those that understand Durga in relation to Krishna, Durga becomes Yogamaya. As how one regards Devi as how she acts. And how one regards Krishna as how she acts. So just with devotion for Krishna, it's like worshipping the internal potency. And that way she acts, and that's the way they see her. Because of their qualification, their devotion to Krishna. Yes?
Back to the rumor question, or any other?
The rumor question.
So when one should make an effort to clarify things,
Krishna made an effort.
And when not to, because I may be wrong, but Vip Srivas Pandit in front of his home.
Oh, that's Srivas Pandit. Everybody, come and look. See the worship of Goddess Kali right here, right at my doorstep. I'm not a worshiper, I'm not a Vaishnava at all. Just see. And everyone said, we know that you're a Vaishnava. Who has done this?
He was not going to clarify.
No. It's so obvious it's not necessary.
It is not necessary. Is that what I understand?
Yeah.
That's not necessary?
Yeah, so obvious it's not necessary. For some people, it wasn't so obvious. Great opulence can bewilder the minds of even discerning people, even elevated souls. The Shamataka jewel was a great opulence, or material, as the beginning of the narration said, never before seen in this world. Suryadev brought this jewel. The people were all revved up. And the mind the discriminatory powers of the mind can become lost. With greed, with pride, with attachment. Jambavan. Jambavan. Like, you know, Hanuman and Jambavan. Jambavan couldn't even recognize his Lord because of attachment on the platform of the body. And like you heard, Krishna wanted a good exercise. Good workout. Yes.
Something that I asked in the morning also is related to that, appreciating Krishna's qualities. So, like, when we appreciate, oh, Krishna is so expert, or he is so beautiful, it seems that a better quality of Krishna is that he made the conception that this is beautiful and this is not beautiful. Or this, he could have handled that expert situation in a different way. He can just change everybody's mind and...
Sure, he can do it a million different ways.
So,
but when he does it, it's still expert.
When I read those qualities, it seems like material things, some of finite things, it's difficult to appreciate those things. It seems like there are...
Well, that's because you're looking through the wrong lens. Look through a devotional lens and it's wonderful. Take your college education, put it on the shelf for a bit, and just go forward with your heart. And it's just very satisfying. Krishna is so wonderful. That's the lens to look at Krishna's pastimes through. But even if, like Prabhupada would say, even if you're an engineer, so look at Krishna and how wonderful Krishna is an engineer. Just see how he has the planets floating in space. Who can do that? Ramchandra can float rocks. Who can do that? What engineer? Wow. Krishna's expert. Even by material yardsticks. So if you really want to go into it with material yardsticks, you'll find that yardsticks don't have any, they can't find the limit of Krishna. But a devotional approach is just to look how wonderful is Krishna. Like this example, residents of Dwarka standing at the mouth of the cave, and 12 days have passed. They know he's Krishna. What can happen to Krishna? They know. But by their affection for Krishna and the influence of Yogamaya potency, they leave despondent. So then they go and offer a prayer. Krishna may return safely. It's their love for Krishna. So that's stronger than this item of reason. It's more compelling. It could be just, oh, we just go back to Dwarka and hang out, and Krishna will come back because he's Krishna. But it's through their intense love for him that they have this anxiety. Which intensifies their feelings through separation.
I had a question, Maharaj, about when we are trying to spread Krishna consciousness to people who have not taken it up or who have no
trouble taking it up.
Right. I get asked a lot of times that what do you read or what do you do, how do you promote this? Because everybody's so busy with their material life, nobody really wants to take that extra step. And so what kind of things can you suggest that we can do for them, in the sense that they have very minimal time, they have a lot of family life, they have a lot of social life, but they all are very impressed by Krishna consciousness teachings and preachings.
Well, try to find what's that on button for them. What turns them on? Maybe they like music. Maybe they like meditation. Maybe they like to read. Maybe. And so just kind of spoon feed that. It's a little spark and you fan the spark. Not too much. But, you know, fan the spark. So, some, like, you know, one of the things that helps people that are, they say they're too busy, it's just that they've made their priorities different. Like you said, in that list is social. You know, they've got to go to this party, that party, and this thing, and that thing, and the other party. So they don't have time. There's something that they can do in between this and that. You know, like say the Bhagavad Gita interactive, something that's technology oriented can often capture that type of person's mind. So the Bhagavad Gita interactive is something else. And they can learn Bhagavad Gita without even reading Bhagavad Gita. And watch all the images and, oh, look at that, and listen to the music and learn Bhagavad Gita. It may not go in very deeply, but it's a beginning. They'll find something that's a beginning, and then see if they can go the next, whatever the next step is that you think they're comfortable taking. Maybe it's inviting them to take 10 minutes each morning and chant mantra. 10 minutes. See what happens. And, you know, explain the benefits of mantra and health benefits and da-da-da-da-da benefits and benefits and benefits. Well, it's a good investment. Good insurance policy. And so, finally, 10 minutes. See what happens. Try for 2 weeks, 10 minutes. Then you encourage them. So find something that brings Krishna in and then support it.
In my workplace, I've been trying to promote a little bit of vegetarianism.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them are Christians. But they say, well, Jesus Christ said, I have no answer for that.
There's lots of answers to that. Where does it say he ate meat is one answer.
Well, they quote like fish. I've never read the Bible, so I don't know. But they say
that's supposing he did. If you were to go to Christ and say, let's go visit a slaughterhouse in the world today, and do you approve of this? What's the answer going to be? No. So, there's your answer. It depends on the individual, but you know, that's one answer. There's Sanjay Raj has written a nice book where both on the topic of reincarnation and the topic of vegetarianism, where the teachings, the original teachings, are very clear in each of the world's religions about vegetarianism and reincarnation. So you can, you know, take that and show, you know, take the quotes from their authority. There's their authority and common sense that both help. From their authority, vegetarian. And the modern interpretation is so many things, but their authority, you know, the original texts from which their authority is derived is vegetarian. And Genesis, this is food. There's you could find out the websites of Christian vegetarians where they make the argument to Christians about vegetarian. But just, you know, find a website, find out what their arguments, make some of the arguments, and say, here's the website, go check it out. Talk to your brethren about whether you should be vegetarian or not, according to your own tradition. But here's some common sense. But like that example I just gave. Even if there is such a thing, even if in the Sea of Galilee where there was nothing else but fish and Christ ate fish, does that mean you go to the slaughterhouse and wholesale raise livestock? You know, acres and acres and acres and millions of acres of corn just to keep the livestock so you can have milk or meat from a slaughterhouse? Let's take a look at some of the videos. I'll show you some of the videos of what goes on in a slaughterhouse. And you tell me that Christ said, that's okay. And I'll say, that's not the Christ I know. He would not say that's okay if he ate fish in the Sea of Galilee. It's common sense. Thou shalt not kill. What about that one? Did Christ stand by that statement? It's an Old Testament statement. It's the Ten Commandments from God. Thou shalt not kill. What about that? And they'll say something, you know, that's not killing. Why is it not killing? Because animals have no soul. Why don't you say that in the Bible? Show me where it says that in the Bible. Animals have no soul. That's killing. Thou shalt not kill. How is that Christian? And here's what your Christian brethren that are vegetarians say. This is what our teaching is. Come on. What is prevalent in the world today doesn't mean, therefore, it's okay. Lots of things in the prevalent in the world today that are not okay. Yes. Last question.
When most of the cases you mentioned about the truth prevails, in any case, if truth is prevailed, then we are supposed to tolerate whatever happened to us and take in consideration of this has happened because of my previous actions.
Yes. Something back there, I don't know what, has brought this. Because this and reality don't match. There's something back there. So I accept. For one thing, as Lord Brahma prays, let my attention not move one inch from the lotus feet of the Lord in the mood of serving Him throughout this situation. Last question, but you can go ask question.
The residents of Lorca exhibited separation anxiety.
Yeah, they did.
Which was a big part of the story.
Yeah.
And the gopis, who had the highest form of Baba, above Krishna, they exhibited extreme separation anxiety, as exhibited by Radharani and Uddhava and Bumblebee.
Yeah.
Should we try to cultivate such separation anxiety? And if so, how do we do that without having seen Krishna? Or does it come naturally through our advancement in Krishna consciousness?
The second answer. We don't cultivate separation. Separation is a result of attachment. You know, a more direct way. Just try to chant with attention and see what happens. And it will bring you to that position. Because although we're chanting Krishna's name, the sense is Krishna's away. We're our own impure hearts have kept us and are keeping us separate from Krishna, although we're calling his name. So then you can call his name with not just cultivating feelings of separation, but, you know, feeling separation, feeling not connected, and calling upon Krishna to accept us again.
So in a sense, we are cultivating separation.
But it's not with the
not with the it's through our sadhana directly of trying to, with great attention, chant Krishna's holy name, or avoiding the offense of inattentiveness, chant Krishna's name. A phrase that I have been personally using is be present with Krishna. Because our tendency is, even with Krishna, to not be present with Krishna. Like, you know, to be with another person, but not be present with that other person. Kind of like the not all there, although you're with the other person. But be present with Krishna. And there are some feelings that awaken when you're trying to be present with Krishna. Like, there's this force that's holding me. It's called the mind. And the desires within the mind, and so on. But Krishna, please take me. Please accept me. And so forth. It just comes naturally. It's not trying to be like the gopis or trying to be like the residents of Dwarapur or something. It's, you know, from attachment comes feelings of separation. And our attachment for Krishna is through the medium of serving him. You will be wise to note that advanced devotees are always serving Krishna. They love serving Krishna. You can't find a moment where they're not serving Krishna. That yields attachment to Krishna. And with that attachment to Krishna comes feelings of separation. For the medium of service itself. Okay, that was our last question. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Yeah. I may be able to completely exhaust the supply of Vrindavan Mahaprasadam that somebody brought back. Some, can you bring? What's that? Okay. We'll go just to this. I think this is the same.